Hey there, blog readers and podcast listeners. I'm having a serious blast expanding my craft of communication with you about empowering people as they travel together towards best health. Adding the medium of sound has been a stretch for me. While tapping my creative juices, I'm testing various ways to blend written, oral, and sound experiences while telling stories and advocating for us, people at the center of care. I published the first two interviews about young adults with complex conditions transitioning from pediatric to adult medical care. I got onto this topic while attending a PCORI advisory panel. PCORI is the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute. A fellow panel member, Kate Houghton, effectively advocated for funding research into the challenges of young adults transitioning from pediatric to adult care. Turns out I know young adults, parents, and clinicians who are willing to be interviewed. And voila, the series has begun. We started with Jill Woodworth, a mom of three young adults with complex conditions. Here's a 30-second clip from that podcast. I had just asked about the journey of increasing autonomy for her children. She's talking about one of her sons.
And then my son, he will be able to do a lot for himself, but again, it'll be very slow. He's learning, like I've taught him to get his own meds. You know, it's mm-hmm. kind of meeting each one of them where they are and what they can do. So, but it's hard.
Oh, yes. My hat's off.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't do anything else.
The second interview was with Sarah Snyder, a 16-year-old. Transitioning herself. Here's a clip of Sarah. She's giving some advice to other young adults.
You know your body the best. So if someone comes along and disagrees or like challenges what you're saying, you feel just to have patience and just put yourself first and don't start doubting yourself or feeling like you're not being taken care of.
I have links to the full podcast in the show notes. Today we'll be talking with Alexis Snyder, who's Sarah's mom, to hear her take on their path. So I'm learning the technology and the story development as I go, as you can tell. And I really appreciate many of you who've commented and made suggestions. I've heard from longtime blog followers and new podcast listeners. So keep that feedback coming. Okay, here's the podcast. Welcome to Health Hats, empowering people as they travel together towards best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, old, white man with privilege, living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in healthcare's Tower of Babel. Let's make some sense of all of this.
Hi, Alexis. Thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it. Can you just tell me a little bit about yourself?
So I am a parent of a now teenager with chronic complex health issues since birth. I also happen to be a patient advocate and family advisor and a patient engagement specialist. So there's the fortunate end of me that understands a little bit more about the health system than perhaps some other parents. But my role to speak to you today is primarily about a parent of a teenager transitioning into the healthcare system on her own.
Where were you when you first realized that health was fragile?
So I think that that's a really interesting question that I've actually given a lot of thought to. And I would say that off the top of my head, most people would equate health and fragile health or realizing when health is fragile with experiencing loss or serious illness, etc. For me, I don't think I've ever taken a step back and thought about life being fragile more so thinking of life as being a series of challenges, or at times an uphill battle, unfortunately. And I think when you're then dealing with any type of serious illness or chronic illness, whether it be yourself or a loved one or a friend, or even if you work in the healthcare field, I think then it becomes more about that also just being another challenge in life. And I think for me, even having dealt with personal loss and unexpected loss of my father and multiple miscarriages, and now having a child who's lived her whole life with chronic illness, I still don't think I've ever stopped and thought about, wow, life is really fragile. I think I've always still thought of it in the mind frame, okay, this is something that we've been hit with, and how do we best cope? And how do we best deal and get through the system positively?
Wow. That's inspiring. Really inspiring. So what does healthy look like to you?
That's a good question too, right? So I think the word healthy can mean a lot of things. Right. And I think off the top of the cusp, for some people, healthy is, you know, eating right and being the right weight, so to speak, and exercising. And certainly to your average physician at a well visit, that's what healthy looks like. I think for me and for my family, in terms of healthy, is living the best life that you can. What is your own baseline of healthy? What does that personally mean for you? And I think even when you're, say, in the terms of the health system, you're an unhealthy person, or you're of average health or not as great as health as the next person, I think the word healthy still means what's your personal best, and that we're all going to be in a different place.
That's interesting. You think a lot about your daughter's health and helping her navigate. One of the things that seems to me being a parent is that it's draining, and at times it can be really lonely. Those things inevitably affect your health. What do you think of that, and how have you managed it? Because when we've spent some time together, you seem so matter of fact. You just take it as it comes, and like you just said about healthy and about fragility, accept what is and move on.
I think I have multiple answers for you. And so you might have to back up and re-ask me some of those questions.
Okay.
Because my answers kind of changed as I was listening to you. And I think for me that part of that, it's nice to hear that perhaps I sound put together and managing it well. And matter of fact, as you were saying, I think that's more of a coping mechanism. I think it's more denial. Mm-hmm. I think it's a safety mechanism that my brain tells me, well, this is what we're dealing with. Let's try to deal with it as best we can and try to move forward as best we can. I think if I really stop and think about it, I might have another perspective. But I think the other half of that answer is, this is something that we've dealt with in terms of my child's health since she was born. And I don't think that we think of it in terms of knowing anything different. She's our only child. This has been with her since day one. And it's all we know. And a lot of people over the years have actually said to me things like, oh, wow, like, how do you deal with that? It must be so difficult to have a child who's sick often, or to deal with chronic illness, or deal with the battles with school and with the healthcare system. And I think for me, and to speak for my husband as well, I think it's all we know. I don't think I know a different life. And so I've learned how to just live through it. And I think my third answer to that would be that I haven't been without my own health issues in the healthcare system, but I think, and I still battle with some of my own, not as serious as my daughter. And so I think, you know, when she came along with all her issues, that took front and center. And so anything that kind of, when you talk about my own health and it taking a toll on your own health, I think a lot of my own health took back burner, so to speak, to making sure that my child lived the best life that she does and gets the best health care that she can get. And I think managing that stress piece, it's always stressful. But again, I think it's a stress that I don't know any different, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. For me, I'm a pathologically optimistic person. Sort of what you're describing, but I do have my 2 a.m. terrors where I have mm-hmm. my little freakouts and woe is me and boy, this really sucks.
Mm-hmm. I think we all do.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things you and I bond over is that we're part of a community. And I feel like while it is lonely to be sometimes, it's your own life and you got to deal with it. And if you're fortunate, like we are, that we have families and support systems and a roof and all of that, still having this community of people who get it,
yes,
is very helpful.
Yes. Well, I would say I have on both ends a lot of people who get it and a lot of people who don't get it. And I laugh when you say that I sound optimistic. I would never describe myself as an optimistic person. Mm-hmm. I think I hope for the best, which I guess hope can be equated with optimism. But I think if you asked me on a regular given day or any day, you know, are you an optimist or a pessimist? I'd probably say I'm somewhere in between and fall toward the pessimistic side, even though I might sound kind of matter of fact and optimistic about things. And I definitely have those 2 a.m. moments where my mind doesn't stop. We've talked about this and not being able to sleep, and whether that be thinking about my child's health or my health or what's on the table for me the next day or whatever it be, you know, or a conflict that happened earlier in the day. I have a very difficult time turning off my mind. And so I think that when you ask me, how does it take a toll on my own health? I think for me, the stress and anxiety piece, I think that was always there to begin with a little bit for me. That's me. That's my personality and what I deal with. Mm-hmm. But I think definitely having a child who has struggled with complex chronic health issues and the healthcare system and having to battle for her, so to speak, on a regular basis in so many different areas, that's the piece that takes the most toll on me, I think.
You sound pretty deliberate when it comes to Sarah and managing her. We're going to deal with this one foot in front of the other. Recognizing that inside there's other stuff going on. I interviewed Sarah last week. I mean, she's eloquent. I guess what it really interests me in this vein, like I feel like we could talk about so many different things, but in this particular vein, you've thought quite a bit about your role as a parent, and now she's entering adulthood and there's a transition to make. How is it that you help her go forward? So how have you been thinking about that? Yeah, you know, what's worked?
I would back up for a minute and I would say that when I think about the transition process, I think that when Sarah's now 16, so she's quite not fully there at, you know, 18 or 21, 25. I think that, like I mentioned before about life being a challenge, I think that there's multiple transitions in life. And I think even when we speak about childhood and chronic illness and dealing with the healthcare system and becoming an adult, this isn't the first transition. The more that I thought about it, I thought, you know, her whole life has been a transition with the healthcare system. So you're an infant and you're born with chronic illness and everything's done for you and to you and you don't know what's going on. You become a toddler, you start having some more visits and interactions with the healthcare system. You start thinking, oh, okay, well, this is what doctors are for. They're here to help. But I'm not quite sure why I'm here, right? Then there's the transition in early childhood where you really start thinking, oh, yes, we have an appointment. I'm going to the hospital. This is why I'm going. You start learning about who you are and how you define yourself to other people and explain your illness and how to identify with it. And have others understand. And then there's this transition process probably between 12 and 14, which is just as big, I think, a transition as transitioning into adulthood in terms of the medical system, where there's this real shift in physicians speaking to the parent or the caregiver and getting all the information from the parent or the caregiver to looking over to now the preteen or teenager and asking them, well, what do you think? You tell me what's going on. How can I best help you? What's your most important complaint on the table today? What's the one thing I could help you with? And I think that that transition first is good preparation when done right with the providers who do that for moving forward to the transition into adulthood. But I would also say, and I'll be more than happy to tell you more about what we're trying to do into the adult transition, that that piece of doctors wanting to try to help the transition early on and getting the child to speak and advocate more for themselves is one helpful, but also there seems to be this immediate shift of we're going to go from your caregiver doing everything for you to now it's on you. And there's no slow in between. And if there was one piece I would change then and change moving forward into adulthood would be that there's no ease in the process, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
It's very much, no, wait, mom, don't speak. I want to hear it from your child, which is good. But we have sat in probably more than one appointment where we've had that happen. My daughter trying to learn how to advocate for herself and how to express what she's feeling and her needs medically, let alone going through adolescence, right? And how just growing up, there's a huge transition there. Trying to do that while living with chronic illness and having a doctor all of a sudden say, well, you tell me and I don't want to hear it from anybody else. There's always that, you know, those deer caught in headlights look and that look over. Well, mom, did I get it right? Did I get it all out? Can you help me out? And there's this piece of physicians who then look back over at your child and you and say, well, how come they can't do it themselves? Are you coaching them? Does this medical problem actually exist? Are you over exaggerating? So I think it's very interesting that on the one hand, the health system is wanting you to grow up and mature and advocate for yourself, but wanting you to get there immediately with no help. So it's like a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you know, go cold turkey. It's all on you now. But to get some help with that process and look over your caregiver and ask for help in expressing yourself is then on the other hand, oh, well, this must be over-medicalizing or why can't you transition this on your own? There really is no transition, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It's a giant jump from one role to the other.
That's so interesting. Well, you've really opened my eyes there. I mean, I think we were walking in D.C., and you were telling me about being in the car, going to an appointment, and having a conversation about what do we want to accomplish in this visit. From that snippet of a conversation, I felt like that's where I got the being somewhat deliberate about the transition, trying to prepare. Did that happen after it was clear, like you were in sort of suspended animation of jumping over a cliff and it's all goodness? You know what I'm saying? Okay. It's like, It seems like it all happens in such fits and starts. What you're saying, what I'm hearing you say, is it's not smooth. Sometimes you're trying to, oh my, this happened. Next time, we better do a little more preparation or something that's, like that.
That's definitely what it is.
Okay.
You know, we can call it deliberation. I think it's reactive.
Reactive.
From the challenges that we've probably encountered in the healthcare system and that lack of ease of transition process. So I think, like I had started to talk about before, I think a lot of it came from not thinking about the transition process and always being used to being the voice and the advocate and the one, well, this is what's going on. This is what happened yesterday. This is what happened. This is what we need next time. To that shift of providers trying to, for a good reason, involve Sarah more and have her kind of express what was going on for her. And so I think that deliberate piece for me came from appointments that sometimes didn't go so well because she hadn't been thinking about it because she's so used to someone else thinking about it for her and doing for her. And that shift of how do we do together and with and not for and move forward so she can express herself. And so I think a lot of times she felt put on the spot, so to speak, when she was asked a question. And again, that deer in headlights look like, oh, I didn't know I was going to have to answer that today. And then it not being able necessarily answer it well enough to convey what was happening medically for her. Even to this day at 16, it's sometimes difficult to go to an appointment together and a physician ask her what her chief complaint is or what's been going well, what hasn't been going so well. Or even a simple question of how have you been feeling over the past 3 months? And sometimes she could have a lot going on that hasn't been going well and we need to talk about medication changes, et cetera. And she'll sit there and say, oh, I'm good. I'm fine.
Yeah, and you know the backstory.
Exactly. And so there's that fine line of how much do you help advocate and get that out to then the physician saying, well, you're doing too much and why isn't she answering?
Yeah.
And so I think that's the deliberate piece. I think we've had a lot of interactions with the healthcare system that went that way because we hadn't stepped back and thought about it to now, like you said, our conversation about either the night before an appointment or a couple nights before or in the car on the way there reviewing it again. Like, okay, well, you want to make sure you tell your doctor what? What happened last week? Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Or don't you remember what happened with that new medication? Did you want to talk about that? Oh, you're right. Yes. And trying to shift from me making those lists of we need to accomplish X, Y, and Z at this appointment to her trying to remember those things. Because, I mean, the unfortunate truth is I won't always be there.
Yeah. I'm in my 60s and I wear all these different hats and I have all this experience. And when I go to the doctor, I'm kind of surprised how ill-prepared and young I feel. And I leave and I think the same thing. Like, oh my God, I totally forgot to whatever. And I get home and I'm trying to tell my wife what happened. In the middle of the night, I'll think, oh, this totally big thing happened and I totally forgot about it at the appointment.
Right.
So it's partially a young adult transition thing and partially just a person trying to manage the thing.
Definitely.
See the show notes or my website for more information, to subscribe or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks.
Thinking about not so much about you and Sarah, but the systems that you're living in. Mm-hmm. You talked about the sensitivity of multiple gradual transitions. What else do you think the systems around you, the medical, healthcare, financial, you know, systems around you where do you think more work needs to be done to be supportive and helpful to young people transitioning?
I think the first answer to that is that the healthcare system isn't always so empathetic, no matter what age you are. Mm-hmm. And I think that the players in the healthcare system need to remember that, again, life is a transition. It's not so black and white, the transition process from adolescence to young adulthood or young adulthood to adulthood. There's no definitive time period. And I think the health system, to organize itself, needs a cutoff. And they need a definitive period of time. Mm-hmm. Not everybody matures at the same rate. Not everybody is ready at 18 to take on a larger role. Some aren't ready till 25. Mm-hmm. Some people aren't ready till 30. Mm-hmm. Some people are ready at 15. And I think that the healthcare system needs to be more forgiving of realizing that there's different personalities and different maturity rates. Mm-hmm. And figure out how to best ease that process and figure out when folks are ready, what do they need more help with. Mm-hmm. And going back to the healthcare system not always being an empathetic place, I think one of the big challenges, I think going from childhood in the healthcare system to adulthood and everything in between, is that we already have a system that isn't always empathetic. And I think when we're dealing with children in the healthcare system, there's not an empathy, there's more of a sympathy. There's more of a, right? There's more of a, oh, this poor child, or oh, how can we help them just cope and get through and be a kid? We want them to be a kid. And I think it's more sympathetic. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you grow up and you're forced into a system that isn't so empathetic for adults to begin with. And you've gone from having, hopefully having had supports in place as a child to learn how to cope and deal and move on. And all of a sudden you're grown up and all those supports get taken away from you and you're supposed to fend for yourself in a not so empathetic environment. I think the healthcare system needs to take a step back in many areas, as you know, but in terms of transitioning into adulthood in the healthcare system, remembering that it's not easy. Putting more steps into place, putting more supports in place, helping with referrals from a pediatric specialist to an adult specialist, improving that communication process. I mean, look, it's, you know as well as I know, dealing with your own health issues and family members, that physicians and healthcare systems work in silos, and it's very difficult to get them to speak to each other. So we have a team of wonderful specialists. It's hard to get them to speak to each other. It's hard to get them to work together as good as a team as we built over the years. Mm-hmm. Now imagine trying to get a whole new team of people to talk to each other in an adult system. Mm-hmm. So it's hard enough to transition within one system, let alone, okay, now this neurologist needs to speak with my new adult neurologist. Mm-hmm. So there's really not a lot in place for the transition process. And just stepping back and looking at what needs to be dealt with, mm-hmm. and finding the baby steps to get there, and knowing that not everyone's going to get there at the same rate or pace, is probably the biggest first step.
Wow. You know, I'm feeling overwhelming sadness and overwhelming excitement at the same time, which is the state of affairs. There's so much good stuff out there. You find team members that are unexpectedly helpful, valuable relationships. Mm-hmm. That's so gratifying and can just take the load off. And then on the other hand, it's such a grind.
Yes.
And it's like a never-ending grind. Anyway, what haven't I asked you about this that is important to you?
You've asked me a lot of wonderful things. I would say, I think, an important piece to mention that we had talked about in the past you ask me kind of how it affects my health or how I cope as a parent. Mm-hmm. I think an important piece worth mentioning is the fear of giving up, for lack of a better way to put it, that control.
Yeah.
Of trying to, you know, being the one in charge of keeping your child as well as you can, or keeping them at least at their healthy baseline, what that healthy is for them. Mm-hmm. And giving up the control and letting them and or somebody else kind of battle it out. I think that there's a big fear of losing that control. Trying to get my thoughts together. You know, there's a big learning curve in adolescence and then young adulthood. Mm-hmm. When somebody else has been helping you manage your life.
Right.
Right? Just like the schools kind of prepare you to move from elementary to middle school or middle school to high school. There's nobody there but your caregivers, and hopefully you have caregivers to help you transition through the healthcare system. And when somebody has always been there to kind of help you balance your life, so to speak, right? Staying hydrated, how much activity do you do or not do because you want to go to a party that night, or it's mm-hmm. a school night and you have an exam the next day, making the choices of what you can or can't do the evening before. Mm-hmm. When someone else is always helping you manage that, it's very difficult to teach them to do that on their own. And I think for me as a parent, the hardest piece of that, twofold. The hardest pieces are, one, giving up that control. And I think if my husband were listening to me, he'd laugh right now, because that's probably my personality in general. Mm-hmm. Giving up control, not micromanaging mm-hmm. somebody else's life. She needs yeah. to learn how to figure these pieces out for herself. But so one, giving up the control, but two, letting her fail. Mm-hmm. Because you can't learn that
right.
without failure.
Yeah.
And obviously,
just look at us.
Her. Look at any adult trying to manage right. today, right? Illness right. or not.
Yeah.
But letting your child fail at anything yeah. is difficult. Right? Teaching them to ride a bike and letting go and letting them fall on the floor, right? Mm-hmm. Is difficult. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about managing your health, mm-hmm. that's a more scary piece.
It is.
For me, because I yeah. think, how can I let you fail and maybe you go to the ER the next day because of it? Or mm-hmm. it's difficult. It's really difficult.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Likewise, yes.
All right,
bye.
There's a mother who loves her daughter. I learned from Alexis that there isn't one transition for young adults and their parents or guardians. There are many, in different flavors and different paces over time. Start transitioning now, wherever now is. That sounds like parenting to me. The next episode will be an interview with Sarah and Alexis together. Here's a clip.
I think, like, in the moment, it was annoying because whenever we'd have to go on field trips, she would come so that she could, like, help me and make sure that I'm not getting too hot or too mm-hmm. cold, and making sure that I'm conserving my energy. But then now, looking back on that, because I had a pretty terrible field trip in middle school that ended with me crying and being very, like, excluded from the rest of the group, I think that was when I was like, oh, well, if my mom was in here right now, like, what would actually be happening? It would be even worse. So now that I look back, I'm kind of thankful that she was always there. But, like, in the moment, I was like, God, Mom, why are you here? I just want to be with my friends.
Follow my blog, podcasts, and resources through my website. See you around the block.